You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
It is Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. My name is Greg Sussman, joined as always with Kay, Scott Angle, the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, of course, Tony Sincotta as well. We go the next 3 hours for you. Up to the fantasy best friends forever, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. What's going on, Scotty?
Busy night. I had to finalize my keepers last night.
Oh!
So, I was kind of stressing over one final decision there, but I got my field in of both major and minor league keepers.
Now, when is the draft? Is it March?
The draft is going to be in March. Actually, I think it's going to start mid-February.
Okay.
It's going to be a slow draft.
All right.
And it's a $100 salary cap, but it's 6x6 with on-base percentage and slugging percentage added in hitting. And in pitching, you have wins plus quality starts as well as one of the categories.
Sounds real fancy.
There you go. Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of stuff going on
with
salaries and whips and innings pitched.
Innings pitched is another one of the categories.
Mm-hmm.
A $100 off-season salary cap, and I had to get it under that. And it came down to, was I going to keep Jake Arrieta at $29, or were I going to keep some other lower-priced players such as Nomar Mazara? Julio Urias was one of them. And I decided to keep Jake Arrieta at $29 so I could have Noah Syndergaard and Arrieta and Anthony Rizzo as my anchors, and kept Corey Seager and Jonathan Villar as my other two keepers.
There you go.
Luke Weaver.
That sounds pretty good. Luke Weaver, of course, the one that
for
you're...
For a buck, yeah.
I mean, that's the one you're just like, I don't know, right?
Yeah, for a buck, I'll do it.
Right, well, I don't know Luke Weaver's starting this year, but it's fine. It's a buck, whatever. It doesn't make it.
Then I think I have some really... good minor leaguers like in Lewis Brinson and Ahmed Rosario and guys like that. So, I kept about 6 of my 10 minor league pitchers.
I got to look these minor leaguers up because I feel like I've never heard of half of these guys, right? Like I know Lewis Brinson, but I'm getting to the point, Tony. I know it's February 1st now, but I got to start checking prospect lists because you guys are all mentioning these minor leaguers. I'm like, who the hell are these guys?
Well, you can check them, but I think it depends on the type of your league, because I think a lot of times I see guys going the opposite. Like, there's so much information now about these young players that people fall in love with them, and they pick these guys too early, and they don't even need half the, in some of the leagues, you don't even need these guys.
Yeah, that's why I like this league, is you have 10 minor league spots.
I like that.
So I'm holding on to Chance Cisco. If Weeders doesn't come back with the Orioles, here's a guy I can use for my second catcher spot.
Yeah, I like the idea of minor leaguers because I'm always up for the idea of getting excited about young guys. Right, like Tony, so many people, and you kind of alluded to it just a moment ago, that so many young people, not young people, but fantasy players,
fantasy owners
love the young guys. We talk about this literally every year and really every month. And
Every day.
it's a great point. How this next young prospect's coming up and he's the all-world thing. We always talk about how not everybody becomes the next Mike Trout, right? Like, there's a lot of more guys that fail, and the best thing to do, Tony, is to trade these young guys the second they come out where the value is perhaps the highest, and you get rid of them, and then you get a nice return out of it. But how do we handle this? Because I think it's draft season, right? It's not the middle of the year yet. How do we handle this, Tone, draft season-wise, where, all right, now everyone's probably even more excited than they will be in June when guys get called up, because everybody has a chance at them. How do we avoid the pitfall of drafting them too early?
Here's the thing. It depends on the type of league. So if you're in a dynasty league or a keeper league where you keep all these guys, or you have 10 minor league spots, there's two ways to approach it. One is you always try to win this year. So you shop around those young players that you already have on your roster for draft picks, or... players, right?
Yep.
So you get these young players there. Now, when you play in a true dynasty league, you keep all the players year to year. So all you get to pick when that draft comes is the new guys that were just drafted
right.
in the free agent. So you get those players, and then I immediately trade them for veterans. So even though it's draft season, I'm trying to make trades, and I'm trying to get established players for my young players.
Yeah, that's what I discussed last about 3 weeks ago on this show. You know, I was able to trade Andrew Benedetti
right.
and Gleyber Torres to get Anthony Rizzo.
Right, and we talked about that, and all
they
was loved
dollar
it.
Each, and he was 32, but like 32 is like because there's like 32 rounds in the draft. Like, you know, actually, it's like 30 rounds in the draft, and like you add on $2 for the year. 32 gave him a first round grade, but to get a first round pick by Rizzo for two guys that are pretty much unproven is something I had to do when I got the offer.
Yeah, you know, like I said, we are all about, I'm all about the proven guys right now. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm going to take my stabs in the draft. And the worst part is, like, and Corey, sure, you know this, right? You're in your home league, right? And we do this every day, and we talk baseball all the time. And there's certain young guys you get excited about. Like, I know you do the Fantasy Best Friends Forever, and Nando literally throws out guys that are in single A 4 years from now that he's excited about, right?
Like, I love it. I got him in score sheet.
Right. this guy's a chance to be the fifth starter of the Royals in 4 years. Like, I'm pumped about
exactly.
it, right? So we all fall in love with certain guys that we're going to take towards the end of the draft. But the worst feeling is when you're in your home draft, not in the industry leagues, right? Not with your buddies that work with us, but just your friends, that you draft this guy, and everybody in the room goes, who in the F is that?
Yeah.
Like, forget us. Like, forget me sitting here with you guys and not knowing, like, certain minor leaguers. But, like, you're in your buddy's draft, and you got no idea who Lewis Brinson is, for instance, just because that's the guy we mentioned. Like, the draft has no idea. I'm just like, oh, God. You're just like, oh, God. Like, now I could have waited six more rounds for this,
dude. Then, but you're pounding on your chest. I'm the big guy. I'm the smart guy.
Yeah, I'm going to get this guy.
I drafted somebody nobody knows.
Right.
You drafted somebody that's likely going to be on your bench and dropped at some point during the season.
Correct.
You're wasting a
spot. It's different with these minor league guys, though, because, like, I was talking about Gleyber Torres last year, and even Lenny Melnick went, who the hell is Gleyber Torres?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Stumped
him. I couldn't believe it.
You did?
Yeah.
But
if we called him up now, he'd have a different opinion.
Yeah, he probably knows who Gleyber is now after the Yankees traded for him.
He'd have the opinion. That I would say he would probably not.
I got him in my summer minor league draft when he was still a Cub.
Good job.
Yeah.
What I find interesting. So in my league, my keeper league, we have a rule. You can draft any minor leaguer you want. In the draft, like, anybody's available to you. But once the draft is over, the only minor leaguers that are available are the ones that, you know, minor leaguers only become available once they play an MLB game, and then you got the waiver process and whatnot. But during the draft, you can draft whoever. But the counteraction to that rule, guys, is that you have to hold them onto your bench until they come up. Once you drop them, you lose them, obviously. So what I like about my league as of now is there isn't an NA spot. Like, you actually have to waste a bench spot on this minor leaguer that you would have drafted in the 15th round because you were so desperate to get this minor leaguer on your team. Let's just use Gleyber Torres as an example, right? Like, you have to waste a bench spot holding onto him perhaps all year. And I think it's a good counterbalance to just stashing 1,000 minor leaguers in the draft.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tony.
I agree. Now, the NFBC is the same thing. You can draft whoever you want, but once the season comes, and you can't just pick up guys off the waiver wire. They have to play one game.
Yes, exactly.
And then Scott can actually talk about this. In Tout Wars, if you pick up a minor league player or anyone you pick up off the waiver wire, Scott, don't they have to go in your roster week?
They have to go in your lineup that first week.
Yeah.
So some guys choose to take the hit. You'll see guys in Tout Wars, stash the minor leaguers. But you know, this league that I got into last year is one of our listeners, and it was with a bunch of military veterans who wanted to extend it. You know, maybe to some, like, you know, a few industry people. Jerry Colvin is also in the league. I think Joe Pizzapia was in this league as well. And I just find it to be a lot of fun because it's a slow draft and you really have to do your research. You really learn who the minor leaguers are. You know, I'm sitting there at 9:30 at night last night deciding whether I should keep Dylan Tate or not.
So there you go, the perfect example. But I remember, Tony, that I think it was Nando that was actually mentioning last year in Tat Wars, like, he was going to pick up this minor leaguer that he really wanted that was going to come up at some point. But he did it. He was able to do it, like, maybe the week before the All-Star. There was some week where they only had three games. Maybe the week of the All-Star game, where they only had Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. So I said, whatever, I'll waste those 3 days with this guy in my lineup, but at least I'll have him.
That's a great idea. Nando with the foresight, pulling a little shenanigans there. That's actually a good move.
Yeah.
Some guys will take the hit, you know, maybe even for the full week, you know, just to have the minor leaguer.
Sure. You know, it is eventually a one spot. And you got to know, if we always talk about this too, Corey, like, you have to know your rules and you have to know your schedule and all that stuff. And that's really the most important way to be successful.
Yeah, no doubt. Because when you're coming up, basically, not only is it the most way to be successful because you're able to execute the rules, but also you can find little hidden gems and stuff like that and little ways to get over. So those are things that are interesting that you got to learn this time of season. You got to do basically what Scott is doing. Get into it right now and be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Val,
it does give you an advantage in your other leagues, though, because you already know who these minor leaguers are.
That is
I was in the last round of my mock last night, the Roto Experts mock, and Lewis Brinson is still there. I picked him.
Yeah, but it's a mock, so it's kind of like
it's a mock, but, you know, you treat it like a real draft if you're doing it seriously.
But you say that, but not everybody does, right? Like, not everybody.
I'm saying I do.
You do, sure.
I personally do because, you know, you're going to have your name on it, and you're going to throw it out there. You know, not everybody does. There's a lot of industry guys who treat a mock as experimentation, but I wasn't taking it as that.
How do you feel about those people that treat it like experimentation?
I think everybody has a different angle. I don't know if I could.
Well, that's what your angle is.
I don't know if I can necessarily knock it. Some people use it as a testing ground because the average player may use it as a testing ground. So I don't know if I could sit here and knock it, but, you know, I'm going to treat a mock like I would a real draft. I'm not going to go into it and say, well, I'm going to try this and see how it works here and then try and see the next mock how it works there, because honestly, I don't have, you know, as much time to mock as I would like. Otherwise, I may treat it like that.
Because it's interesting to me. Like, if you're just going to mock, you know, pick the best team you can, right? And not really experiment. Like, aren't you kind of doing the same thing every time then? Like, you're not experimenting.
That's why we talk about diversifying rosters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it would depend on, too, what spot you drafted. Like, so if you drafted
good point.
From the 2 spot to the 11 spot, you would have different strategies.
Right, and that's a very good point, too, of course.
I'll see different results, but what I'm saying is I'm not going to say, okay, you know, today I'm going to go do the number 1 pick, tomorrow I'm going to do the number 8, you know, stuff like that.
But that's not wrong, I wouldn't say.
I'm not saying it's wrong. No. I'm just saying it's not something that I do. It's like, I'm talking fantasy baseball here, though, because you're investing a lot more time in a fantasy baseball mock than you are in a football mock. I may tend to get more experimental in a football mock.
It depends on what you're doing, Matt.
They can really be worthless.
I know a guy that has the first pick in a high-stakes league we're in, right? So it's over 1,000. So what he's done is he makes sure he gets the first pick in mock drafts. And he goes and he picked Clayton Kershaw in 1, and then he wants to see what his team comes out with, you know, picking a pitcher number 1.
Yeah.
And then he's picked Mike Trout number 1.
Right.
And then I think he picked Mookie Betts number 1. So he purposely ran those 3 drafts like that, and he hated picking out of the 1 spot, and he tried to immediately ask for if we could trade picks in the league. And the league didn't allow it.
Huh. I mean, it makes sense, but that's kind of the reason, right? That's the reason you do the mocks in general.
Yeah.
What I find interesting, Scott, is the statement that you just made, that because baseball obviously is, let's say, 30 rounds or 25 rounds or 50 rounds in Tony's case here, you find yourself, listen, you don't get as experimental as you do in football because it takes a while, right? Like, there's a lot more going on. To me, it would be the opposite, because there is so much in baseball, because there are so many players. That would make me want to experiment even more with football. Like, all right, I know there's 16 rounds. I know every guy back in front, right? Like, we talk about guys ad nauseum from May to August. I know every guy. I know every situation so much more easily than I do. Like, I can play situations out of my head over and over and over again. And, you know, with a few tweaks, I know what I'm getting. With baseball, there is so much more variance because of how many guys there are, how many different opinions there are. I think in baseball, you would actually be more experimental.
Yeah, I think everybody can look at it differently.
Sure.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't say, you know, one way or, or another is necessarily wrong, because you also have mock auctions. You know, they started them a few years ago online, and I thought they were actually kind of more fun than the mock drafts, you know, if they were done right.
Okay, so the mock auction, I always found to be the absolute dumbest idea ever. Like, there's nothing dumber than a mock auction, in my opinion.
Why is that?
Nobody stay. You're not going to stay in them.
Number one, you're not going to stay in it the whole time. Because it's not a slow draft or anything. It takes, you know, say three hours to use that
round. A real auction can take 6-7 hours.
Yeah, sure. But this one takes, let's say, three. Let's cut it
in half. I'm saying three to do a mock is
What is the price the guy goes for in your mock? Anything to do with the price the guy could go for in your real draft. You know, like, a lot of it's the order these guys are taking, and it's the opinion of the guys in the room. Like, an auction to me, a mock auction, football, basketball, baseball, completely useless, Corey.
I can see where you're coming from on that.
It really makes very little to no sense to me to try to experiment with it, unless you're going in there with a group of guys that you know are going to be in there, stay through it.
Even still. Tony, would you ever participate in a mock auction?
How much people tipping their hand? I think an auction is a thing. You know it when you're in it. You feel what I'm saying?
I agree with you.
I think that if you've never done one, it's a good idea.
Sure, I agree with that.
Because it just goes so quick, and you have so much to pay attention to, that if you've never done one, and if you've done only live ones and never done one online, you should get in it, because something seems to go wrong in every auction that's online. Like, it's gotten so much better over the years. Who was it? Ben, I said the first, fantasyauction.com, Scott, in the industry, and that thing
that
sucked
was,
when we first... Yeah,
that was. I think George Del Prado had like an auction site.
Yes, yes.
I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
And there was a hiccup every single time you used it when we first started. Yeah. Then CBS got involved. Then ESPN got involved. And it's still like minor little things that you got to be careful of. So if you've never done an online auction and you're going to do one for money or in a league, I would at least practice. But it's just practice to get used to the software and becoming aware of how an auction works.
There you go. That is the only reason that I could say getting into a mock auction, Tony. I think that's reasonable, right? You've never done it. Let me see how it works. Let me see how the software works. I'm fine with that. But you know what?
You're gonna hop in and hop out.
Correct. You'll make three picks. You'll spend some money. Like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly. Back to Housewives of Atlanta.
Right. But I'm gonna need leaks. There you go. Totally with you on that. Okay, let's take a break here. We're gonna come back. We'll talk some players, because we're gonna go back to Tony's poll questions from last week that he's running all the time on his Twitter account, @TheTonySincada. We have a bunch to get to, and I want to start with the second baseman, because yesterday we spoke about Brian Dozier versus Robinson Cano, but who you'd be drafting first. But when Tony ran his poll, neither of those guys was the answer. We'll explain and debate next here on the Roto Experts. Returning here, Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Later on the show, we are going to chat more about the two teams we were discussing yesterday in the FSCA draft, which is Anthony Perry's and Rick Wolf's teams, because they pick 1-2. But kind of building off of that conversation, guys, that we had, the first conversation we really had regarding these two teams were their second baseman, right? Were their picks in the second round, Robinson Cano and Brian Dozier. Now, those guys were the second and third second baseman off the board after Jose Altuve, who went in the first round. Fine, Altuve goes in the first round, and that's it. Now, Tony ran a poll last week saying which second baseman would you draft first? And the poll stated, would it be Brian Dozier, Robinson Cano, Jonathan Villar, who Scotty just mentioned he kept, and Roughneck Odor. Four good choices, four guys that had really good years last year, right? Home runs, and some guys hit for power, some guys have speed. And I thought the answer was very interesting. So let me pose that to the group before we give away what the people wanted and kind of see where they were coming from. Corey, I'll begin with you here. Out of those four guys, and yesterday we decided Cano versus Dozier, and you did say Cano, would you have, I guess, I'll take Dozier out of it because you already said Cano, would you rather have Cano, VR, or Roughneck Odor?
I want to try to get my stolen bases.
Okay.
In the first round.
Okay.
I want to add. I want my first round draft pick, if it's not a pitcher, to be a player that's going to have some kind of stolen base value.
So like a 25-30 guy or whatever.
Somebody that can give me something in the category. Okay. So in the second round, it'll allow me, if I'm going to go second baseman, maybe towards the back end of the second round, with these, like these gentlemen did in the draft right here. I'm gonna jump on Robinson Cano.
Okay.
Obviously, he's not going to give you the stolen bases. Those days are over.
Right.
But he's a consistent, solid, reliable four category second baseman. Is going to give you a batting average close to 300. Might drop 30 home runs on you. The RBIs will be close to 100, and he'll get close to 90 to 100 run scores. And he's going to play 156 to 161 games. So I think Robbie Cano is the way to go right here.
Tony, what about you?
Yeah, if you asked me this question 2 weeks ago,
yep,
I would have gave you a different answer.
Okay.
I would go Jonathan Villar.
Okay.
I'm looking at what's going on now with all these home runs that you have in Major League Baseball. And we talk about it every show. I mean, 111 guys hit 20 home runs. The one thing you're going to find that stolen bases are down. And I'll take that, and I think they're real. He put up 62 last year. I'll put him down for 40, take that in the second round, and a decent batting average in a pretty good offensive ballpark, and I'll take the 40 stolen bases and pick Villar.
All right, so you're going VR here, who in the third round of the FSTA draft. We talked about him a little bit last week with Charlie Wiegert. So let me turn to you, Scotty. Yesterday we discussed Cano versus Dozier. Tony prefers VR to both of them right now. Where are you?
I'd probably lean Dozier over Villar. VR personally, because I know I'm getting the pop along with the speed. I feel like I'll get the highest batting average, a good amount of runs scored, and around 30 home runs with Robinson Cano.
Okay.
I can still get my speed a little bit later. I'd rather take the guy that I know is more of a slam dunk for power. But, you know, what Tony's not saying is not necessarily wrong, because I think different owners and different analysts have different perspectives. I prefer, you know, to jump on a combination of good batting average and power early, you know, and get the run score too. With VR, I felt like the homers were a nice bonus, but what's really going to be, you know, the number there this year, it's like could be below 15.
Tony, do you remember?
So who was the player, Scott?
Cano.
Cano. Okay,
Tony,
Robbie,
do you remember the answer to this poll? I have the answer, but do you remember what the answer was?
No. No.
The answer was Roughneck Odor.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. So we kind of just debated a little bit between Cano, Dozier, and VR. Nobody said Odor, but the people did, which I find incredibly interesting. Odor in the FSTA draft here, he wound up going in the first pick of the fourth, or the second pick of the fourth round. And again, it's a 13-team industry league draft, and I understand that maybe it's not necessarily representative of the people per se, and it's a draft that takes place in January. We have 2 months of doing this. But nevertheless, I find it incredibly interesting that the majority of the people that you polled here, Tony, and again, it's liberal media, it was on Twitter, but the majority of the people preferred Roughneck Odor. Do you think that is related to something we were just talking about in the youth? Like, all right, Robinson Cano's in his 30s. He's not sexy anymore. Brian Dozier, you know, he had 42 home runs. He had 18 stolen bases, but the average was disgusting. Jonathan Villar, can he do it again? Will he steal 60 bases? But Roughneck Odor, man, that power, he's like 23 years old. He's going to be good for a long time. Do you think that is why your poll, they preferred Odor to these other guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they look at that offense, they people jump in. Now, the problem I have with Odor compared to the other players is that he had a home run to fly ball ratio at 17% last year.
Okay.
So I just wonder if the home runs actually repeat. And I would love to know who the stolen base guy Scott's going to get late in the draft would be.
I'm just saying I'd probably wait another round or two.
Well, so we're going to talk about that in just a few seconds, because I'm glad you brought that up here, Tone, because that was another poll that you ran, so I'm excited to get into that as well. But what do you think is a better chance, Scotty, of repeating his power? Someone like Odor, who did hit 33 home runs, but Tony just gave you the home run to fly ball ratio, or Brian Dozier, who hit 42. Like, who is a better chance to get back to, I mean, let's just use 35 as a number. I know Odor only hit 33. Who is the best chance to hit 35 home runs between those two guys?
I would probably say Dozier. I mean, people love the upside of Odor, and it wouldn't shock me if he did. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, if Dozier drops off, he's still going to hit 30-plus. You know, I think he's proven that as a skill. So, you know, from that perspective, I would go Dozier.
Dozier's home run to fly ball ratio was about 18% here. Yeah. And then you have Odor's home run to fly ball ratio was 17%. So it was actually a little bit more, Tony.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think either one of these are a gift for 30 home runs.
Okay.
I mean, you look at Dozier, I would probably put him, if I was doing my my picks, I'd put him at 25 home runs. I think, you know, 42 home runs. This is a guy that didn't get a hit in April and May, and just went on a tear.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, he went on a tear, but we're talking about a guy that hit 28 home runs before, 23. Twins ballpark ain't a great offensive ballpark, but Dodger Stadium's a great pitcher's ballpark. He's switching leagues. I think there's a lot to set up for failure if he gets traded, if he goes in any of these trades that people think we're talking about. Dodgers, they're talking about, you know, other teams there. The Minnesota Twins, he could get a bargain. He could get to a good ballpark, but I don't know. I mean, if you go to the National League, he would be a guy on the move. That's like trading like David Robinson right now. You can't draft these guys because you just never know where they're going to be.
And the interesting thing about Dozier, like, people are bored of him, and they don't think, he's this older guy. I mean, he's not even 30 years old. He'll turn 30 in May. Odor will be 23 in 2 days from now. So, like, I get it. People like the youth, and they're excited about that. But I think the better bet to repeat the power, despite the slightly better high home run to fly ball ratio last year, I think I agree with you, Tony. The better one, and Scotty, the better one to repeat here probably is Dozier. I also think speed wise, and that's something that, as Corey, you just mentioned, you'd love to get guys that do a little bit of both, right? Like, Odor did steal 14 bases last year, and he did have 27 stolen bases in 2013 in the, or 32 actually, when you combine all of his single A and double A. 2013, he's got to have put up over 30. Now, Dozier's done it in the majors, right? He put up 21 in 2014, only at 12 in 2015, but back up to 18 in 2016. I think Dozier, maybe because he's done it before more often than not, I'm more excited about. Odor is obviously an ascending player, but I don't know if Dozier's a descending player.
I think
it's closer.
I do think it is closer, too, but I just think he's more toolsy with the batting average. I'll take the UFO on Odor. And the regression is I think the regression is more than likely to come for Dozier, in my opinion. You know, that home run to fly ball ratio takes a dip off of those unbelievable. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we got a 30-year-old stolen base guy too.
Right.
I don't know exactly, you know, when it's going to go the other way.
Right.
But and then the constant trade rumors too. You could get in a team that doesn't run.
Yep.
Does he switch spots in the batting order? Does he hit third or fourth?
Sure.
So there's a lot of things in speculation for each of these guys.
There absolutely is.
With Villar, do you guys think the power is sustainable? I mean, in 2011, and you know, he did hit 10 home runs in the minor. In 2012, he hit 11. Last year, with also a 373 BABIP, is that average sustainable? The steamer projections for him are 255 with 15 homers and 48 steals.
What would you do without the steamer?
I would give you the exclusive edge projections, which have not been released yet.
Ooh. You could have also just said the depth chart projections, the fans' nine projections, which are also under the steamer.
Yeah, the fans have them for 283, where steamer has them for 255. 14 home runs, 52 stolen bases. They're a little bit more generous.
Yeah, the one difference I think is when you talk about a 25-year-old player, right? So some of those numbers you were citing when he was 21 years old. And just breaking into baseball, and to think that this was a player on the rise. I think that the power numbers are probably a little inflated on the 19. I think you could pencil him in for 15, and like I said, I'm going to even knock down the
stolen bases. I was talking that as a positive, because I know that I've seen some analysts say the 19 home runs is not, you know, that's a big outlier, and then I point to the minor league numbers saying that skill is there. So I'm kind of agreeing with you, you know?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's at a lower level. It's hard to judge that. So knock a few off. Let's just always be safe, be conservative about it, right? Knock a few off. Knock 20 stolen bases off and drop his average down 20 points, right? And you still get a guy that's going to steal 40 bases. And the problem is if you wait in your draft and you try to get stolen bases late, you're going to pick a guy that hits in 230s.
And this, right, but, you know, what if you could wait, you know, like, what, three rounds more later or so, you know, get D. Gordon?
You're not getting the pop. You're not waiting three rounds later to get T. Gordon.
Yeah, what, two rounds later to get D. Gordon?
Let's just use the FSTA draft as an example. Yeah. That's what we have, right? So you had VR go in the third. You had D. Gordon go six picks later.
Right.
That's not two rounds. That's six picks.
Yeah, and then you get a guy that's going to hit three home runs. So good luck.
Fast though,
he might have a higher batting average though, too.
So I think that's what, so that's what I'm obviously looking for, right, Tony? When I'm looking for the speed component, and I agree with you with Jonathan VR. Let's play it safe. Let's take 7 home runs away. Let's give him 12 home runs. Let's take 20 steals away. Give him 40 steals. Let's take the average and bring it down to 265, 270.
Yeah.
That's still a guy that's giving you 40 steals, batting around 270, is getting double-digit pop. There is still something a lot to like there, rather than waiting and getting Billy Hamilton, who's going to bat 240, if we take the same 20 points away from him.
Get 240.
240 and get you the same or close to steals, right?
Being generous on Billy Hamilton.
Well, but I'm talking about another speaker. I'm not picking a guy 6 picks later. I'm picking a guy that you are going to get a couple rounds later, theoretically. Right.
And that's the problem, is that I didn't get a chance to get VR in my last draft, and it got to a point where I saw the stolen bases were dwindling, and every single one of the guys that had stolen bases had warts, big warts.
Right.
And I regretted not picking Billy Hamilton, who I don't want on any of my rosters. If you have a good draft, you shouldn't need Billy Hamilton. But I needed him in that draft, and I didn't pick him, and then you end up with Jared Dyson at the end. Dyson's, he's a great. He can steal 40s with stolen bases, right? Has a decent average, but he's going to hit 3 home runs. So if you hit 3 home runs from a player, you got to make it up somewhere else. So that's why I think these double-digit home run guys in 40 stolen bases are high in demand.
Yeah, I'm not saying...
Anyone can hit 20 home runs in baseball now.
I'm not saying I'm necessarily of this camp, you know what I'm saying? But there's... You know, we talked about how people didn't want to spend up for high starting pitching in the past. People didn't want to spend up for speed in the past and said they would get it later. And because they don't want, like, 2.5 category, 3 category players.
Well, let me ask you this.
That's what you're going to get if you wait later.
Let me ask you this, Tony. You bring up this point about 20 home runs are easier to come by.
Yeah.
And the high steal totals are not. So aren't you making the case that, listen, all right, I know that VR just stole 62 bases last year. We'll drop it down. He's a 40 steal guy, let's say, right?
45.
Okay.
Thank you.
Aren't you making the argument then, all right, Brian Dozier's giving you 18 last year. Rather than Odor probably ascending in that category, can't you make the argument now that maybe both of those two guys should be drafted ahead of Robinson Cano, because they're both going to give you 30 home run power, both have the ability to get you 15 or 20 steals. Maybe both of those guys, as well as VR, should be picked ahead of Cano. Then
I look at it, but Robinson Cano is so consistent and locked in and done it time and time and time again.
Well, did what?
I don't know if I want the drain on my batting average with Dozier. That's the thing. That's the trade off.
I think Corey hit it on the only difference. Like you, that's definitely a case. That's a strong argument, Greg.
Right.
Absolutely. But in Corey's defense, is when you make an early pick in a draft, predictability and probability is a huge factor in that. And Robinson Cano had one bad year in Seattle. He told us after that he was injured. Then he came back with a huge year the year after. And he said, you know what? He was right. And so you know what you're getting with him. So that's a big thing. And then you adjust accordingly there. Brian Dozier, like I said, April, May last year, he didn't do anything. He put it together last year. We've seen him going a little bit up and down. I think Robinson Cano and a 300 batting average is a lot to say for that. So I could make the case to go either way there.
Okay.
I myself, though, am telling you, when you get in a draft, you got to get 160 stolen bases. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, and then, you know, basically I was saying, you know, has the outlook changed overall in the industry on stolen bases? There was a lot of guys that didn't want to spend up to get to speed. And with the Cano thing, I think, you know, it's not exciting to have a 300 average. I think when you're that consistent, sometimes people just take that for granted, and it's not easy to get.
Well, Tony and Corey just made the right point to me about Cano. Like, all right, so Dozier, so VR, we just took 20 stolen bases away. We took 7 home runs away. For Dozier, we just took a bunch of home runs away. For Rougned Odor, we're kind of not sure he's a younger player. I don't need to take anything away from Robinson.
No, take Robinson.
You know exactly
turn
what
around
he's
and
going
back
to do.
At a baseball card,
right.
And that's what it is.
And that's the biggest difference here. And the argument for Cano rather than the argument
to
for
my
the
question,
other
guys. Though, we saw with fantasy football how trends change year to year. I think with baseball now, we're seeing that people are more willing to take the starting pitching early. Whereas a few people, it seems like the way we're talking this up, people are more willing to go for the speed early where they would decry it.
No,
in past
see,
years.
That's not. No, I don't believe that's true.
Okay.
I think you
I'm
want
asking
five
the question.
No. Yeah. What I'm saying is the speed guys to me are Billy Hamilton. They're Jared Dyson. Those guys don't offer any ability to hit a home run. But what people are in demand is a guy like Jonathan Villar, who's going to hit double-digit home runs and give you stolen bases. So it's five-category guys as opposed to just speed guys.
So is D. Gordon in the third round where he went in the FSTA draft? Is it still crazy?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy from a lot of standpoint. One, you're getting a guy that's going to steal bases only. Two, how do we know he's going to do it? He did them when he was on steroids.
It's true.
All those batting averages on steroids. So what happens when he stops?
And that's a good point because I've had this conversation too that, you know, the average person thinks steroids just make you bigger and stronger. They do a lot of other things.
Let's continue this conversation about D. Gordon here and this second baseman because, Scott, I do want to expand on your question about are we considering – instead of punting speed or just like, all right, I'll get somebody the 20th round for speed, are we changing the opinion? And I think there's more discussion to have there. So let's continue the conversation and bring you into it at 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. We'll be back right after this here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. So I think Scotty's question here in regards to just caring more about speed a little bit earlier on, to me, holds a little bit of water. And I think what has changed is that you, in the past, and Corey, you can go over here if I'm wrong here. In the past, we looked for these 30 to 40 home run dudes.
Power.
That would give you those 10 to 15 steals, right? Like, that was like, if they chipped in a little bit with the speed, they moved up for you, right? Like, that was the thing.
Right. You want McCutcheon, you know, to give you that 25-25.
So I think, well, that's always going to be true. That doesn't change. But what I'm saying is I think now we're almost becoming okay with a guy that's going to steal you 50 to 60 bases perhaps, but also just get you 15 home runs. Like, it's almost like the other way, right? Like, instead of getting 45 home runs and 15 steals, the other way of getting 50 steals and 15 home runs is also really become okay.
Yeah.
And that is why I think, guys, that how Jose Altuve, it's been like the rise of Altuve, how we've
And now seen, you got VR in that same conversation.
Yes,
too. Yeah.
Precisely. How Jose Altuve's been a guy that, like, we always debate this. We've had this debate before, and I'm sure we'll go into it more in the next couple of months. Is Jose Altuve, like, should he be a top five pick? And like, this year, I think the answer is yes. But there's people that don't want to start their teams with Jose Altuve. They don't want to build their teams like this because they don't believe that 24 home run power is real. Sure, they'll see the stolen bases dropped a little bit. They liked him 2 years ago when you saw him have 56 stolen bases, only at 7 home runs. Where do we take Altuve? That was a big question last year. Now we saw the average drop all the way to 313, but the home runs went up to 15. The stolen bases dropped a little bit to 38. Somehow he's now a top five pick. It's the Jose Altuveization, if you will, to me, of drafts, guys.
And then can you look at it and say that he's not really like the top offensive player in the game? Across the board.
I think you can make the argument Mookie Betts probably is now.
Yeah, I would say Betts.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're looking at Altuve, though, you're getting double-figure home runs, like Tony said.
Yep.
You're getting a ton of steal. You're getting runs scored, and you're getting a nice batting average. You know, what's not to like? That's the difference between Altuve and VR is probably going to be the batting average.
Yeah. That's what makes him a top-five pick. If these same numbers – like, I think the only reason you don't pick him in top five is you don't believe the 24 home runs are real.
Yeah. Right.
But you scale him down to 15, 16, though. You're still getting a really nice pick.
Let me ask you this. Where did he go last year in drafts? Do you remember? Who? Jose Altuve.
He was going towards the back end of the first round.
Back end of the first round, right? Mm-hmm. And that is...
And we were debating if he was going too high.
Right. So this is taking away everything, right? This is giving him 15 home runs, as you just said, Scotty. Let's give him 8 more stolen bases. Not unreasonable. So he had 38 stolen bases in 2015.
Right.
And the average drops from 338 to 313. Again, this is basically what you just said. If the numbers drop a little bit here from 2016 to 2017, you're talking about a back end first round guy. That's exactly what we talked about last year here. So it's pretty good. No matter what you're going to
get. If you draft him at 5 and he gives you value at 10, 11, he's not killing you.
No, he's good. You're going to be happy with that when it's all said and done. So I think to answer your question, just from my answer, Scott, from previously, yes, I think we are embracing having the higher steal guys as long as we get the average with it and taking a little less power these days. I think the answer is yes, which then leads me to D. Gordon, because I have no idea what the true D. Gordon is. I know with the Dodgers early in his career, he obviously struggled to be able to get on base. Eventually came back into the majors, played second base for them in 2014, had an outstanding year stealing 64 bases, but he had zero pop, which is, of course, the difference between him and an Altuve and a VR. Last year, he gets suspended for steroids, comes back, steals 30 bases, right, in 79 games. The year before that with the Marlins, hit four home runs, stole 58 bases. But he might have been on steroids for that also. I don't know what I'm getting. I do think, like, his speed itself, to me, is probably real, but I don't know the clip that he will get on base with. I'll start with you, Corey. Would you rather have D. Gordon here, knowing that you don't necessarily know what you're getting? Would you rather have D. Gordon or would you rather have Billy Hamilton?
I'd rather have D. Gordon.
Okay.
Yeah, D. Gordon is a better baseball player.
But do we know that, or how are we?
I think I feel pretty comfortable with that. I last year, awkward year. Listen, he's still in, what you said, 30 bases in 79 games. Mm-hmm. What was that, 24 when he came after he came back? He only had 6 in the first half of the year before he had the suspension. Now, the batting average did stay the same for the entire season. It was in the 260s before he left and the 260s when he got back also. So you take that into consideration, you worry. But I think he can push the batting average closer up to 290 this year. I think making contact and getting on base is a part of his game that's legit, and I think it's real. Really, the batting average goes up with, like, what, an extra hit a week? You know what I mean? You can get it from 260 to about 290, and that can be an infield hit. He has that type of a game. So, I think D. Gordon is legit.
The problem with drafting a D. Gordon is you get no power and you get no RBI production.
Right.
So you're drafting for three categories, mm-hmm. maybe 2.5 here. Steamer has him hitting 278.
During the bell, I tell you, he says Steamer now.
Yeah, well, I don't have the fans' projections for him. They're not here.
No, whatever's good for you, Scott, works for me.
I think when you're talking about, the PEDs, he obviously wasn't as good a hitter as he was when he was winning the batting title. But speed is something I think you can't necessarily teach. And he's always had the natural speed. So I think, you're still going to get 35 stolen bases out of him, maybe 40. And, an on-base percentage lead, though I don't like him. Pitchers are always going to pitch to him because they don't want to walk him, because they don't want to put him on first. That's one of the reasons why, he's not really an OBP guy.
But hold up. The thing is, we're talking about stolen bases. Mm-hmm. I think I put $10 down that he'll lead the ML in the majors in stolen bases this year.
He could. He has the ability, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He has the ability,
so
too.
So it's not like, you're getting a run-of-the-mill stolen base guy. I understand.
Right.
You don't get no RBIs. You don't get no home runs.
But he's not a good hitter as he was when he won the batting title.
Are you sure about that, Scott?
He hit 268 last year as a career 278 hitter.
Yeah. The problem to me is, if he took steroids after the 2013 season, you're picking a one category guy because he hit 234.
Yep.
He hit 228. And last year we saw him drop down to 268. So mm-hmm. Is this a guy that was steroid induced when he had the decent batting averages? Because he's only had 2 good years of batting averages.
Because when you take steroids, and like I said,
268 is not a good.
You can say all you want and vilify the guy all you want. But when I read Canseco's book, it taught me a lot about steroids. This is a guy, a doctor without the friggin' doctorate, what he knows about steroids. Everybody thinks steroids just make you buff. It doesn't. It increases hand-eye coordination, quick twitch muscles, everything, reaction times, everything that you need to be a better baseball player. So that speaks to Tony's point.
So I think it's interesting because, the problem with D. Gordon and why he's going a little after...
What's the major league average, batting average?
Well, hold on. I'm getting into this.
I'm sorry, Greg.
The fact is, the reason he's going a little bit after the guys that we just mentioned, second base-wise, it's not that 268 average is the problem, Core. Like, right. Okay. You tell me he's batting 268, that's fine. He doesn't have
stuff.
Home runs or RBIs. So, Brian Dozier is going to hit around there, right? Ruffin Odor might go back down to there. We know the second basemen are going to hit, let's say, 270, right? Like, that's fine. You're not going to have D. Gordon hit 330. So if you give... if you give Gordon that average, the same with everybody else, you give him 50 stolen bases, that's fine. Still no home runs, no RBIs. It's now a 2.5 category.
And with VR last year, that was...
the guys are going around and a half ahead of him, no?
Yeah. They are, and then that's the argument for that to happen. Yeah. Absolutely.
VR last year was such a pleasant surprise. I thought he was going to be a Busted D. Gordon type. Oh. Like the no, the first time he hit two home runs in the game, I'm like, wow, this is a great bonus.
Sure.
You know, I expected the speed and maybe a pretty good batting average. The power was a really nice bonus.
All right, so let me ask you then, Scott. I have the same question I asked Corey. Would you rather have D. Gordon or Billy Hamilton?
I'd rather have D. Gordon because I'm going to get a decent batting average.
But I don't understand. D. Gordon batted 268 last year. Billy Hamilton batted 260.
It's only an 8-point difference. And, you know, we saw Gordon do it, but he was on the steroids. I feel like Gordon's about a 275 hitter, whereas Hamilton might top out at about 260.
So you're saying last year's the high water mark, 58 stolen bases, 260, and that's it for Billy Hamilton?
I don't know if I have a lot of confidence he can get much higher than that.
Okay. I know, Tony, you've been pretty, you know, pretty...
It might be his ceiling where it might be... His ceiling might be what Gordon's floor is.
Tony, you've been pretty dead set on, like, listen, you should not... You just said it. You should not have to draft the team, build a team that you need to draft Billy Hamilton on. Can you make the case, then, that you shouldn't need to draft a team, make a team that you need D. Gordon on?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's worse because I got to pick him in round 3 or 4.
Right.
And I'd rather, and I could get, Hamilton in round 6 or 7. So he would be the guy I would pick.
Okay.
Just because the draft would be the difference there. I think I'm going to get more stolen bases from Hamilton, but you can debate it. It'll be close.
Yeah.
I'll probably get one or two more home runs. I think there's a chance the batting average could be a lot worse. But here's the thing with Billy Hamilton's batting average that's crazy, is that when he hit 226, this is not a guy that strikes out a lot. He only struck out 16% of the time, which is amazing in today's baseball. And for a guy that can absolutely fly, he had a batted balls in play of 264 because he had so much weak contact. And then your batted balls in play goes to 329 the next year. He strikes out a little more and has a 260 batting average. I think he's closer to 260 than he is 228.
I agree. The 264 BABIP is just incredibly, incredibly low. And maybe 329.
For a fast guy, it's amazing.
It's incredibly low, right? And to me, it's funny that he actually struck out more when the BABIP was higher. It's like a weird thing. I totally agree. He's more of a 260 hitter. I think there's a chance that D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton are very close to the same player here.
Yep. I agree, and that's why I'm taking a guy that's going a couple rounds later.
I get that. Yeah, but I mean, also...
you asked, Tony makes a good point. You asked me outright rather who I'd rather have. So, you know, I think Tony.
I asked the same question.
No, you said who'd you rather have? You know, D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton. I wasn't thinking about it the way that Tony just did. You know, wait 2 rounds later. You know, get Billy Hamilton.
In the FSCA, to be fair, Hamilton only went. Let me see here. Hamilton only went. He went 3 picks later. That's the FSCA. It's different. I understand that. But he only went 3 picks later there, so that was kind of similar. I just wonder, does a position... I know it doesn't matter to you, so I'll go to you, Tony, here. Does a position mean anything to you? D. Gordon, you're getting a second baseman. Billy Hamilton, you're getting an outfielder.
Not really, but it's easier to find in the end game. So I get these stolen bases, right? Whatever, 5th, 6th round. And at the end, I'm gonna have to make up in home runs because I'm getting 3 home runs from these guys.
Right.
It's going to be easier for me to find a 20-home-run guy in the outfield than it is at second base. So that would lean me towards Gordon if you look at it from a position standpoint.
Okay. We'll break here. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the second baseman. One more I want to get to before the top of the hour. Stick around. It's the Road Rush for the morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. One more second baseman here he wanted to talk about, kind of the opposite from the speed guys we were speaking about, like Odor, Gordon, not speed guys, but it's like, to me, it's almost Robinson Cano light here. that is Daniel Murphy, your boy, Scotty. Daniel Murphy last year, 25 home runs, batted 347. The year after, the year before that, 281, 14 home runs. Now, he's at a point in his career, he's not going to steal the double-digit bases anymore. I don't think that's his role, at least in Washington. I know he's a little bit older than these guys. He'll be 32 this year. Daniel Murphy, to me, more like Robinson Cano than these other guys, the Dozers, the Odors, the Gordons here that we're mentioning, the Altuve, certainly. So, Daniel Murphy, with all the conversation that we're having about the previous four guys, right? Like, we decided Odor, VR, Cano, or Dozier. Where is Daniel Murphy, including Gordon here, where does Daniel Murphy fall for you in that?
So he doesn't have, like, the power and the
well, I don't say he doesn't have the power. He had 25 home runs last year.
Like Cano.
Right, right.
Finish
right.
my sentence.
Okay.
then you got the combination of power and speed with VR. Then you have the upside. I mean, I would obviously take him over Gordon though, because yeah, like we said, you know, I don't know if I want to spend up for, you know, that much, and you know, maybe I can even wait like for on a Billy Hamilton or a Gerard Dyson, you know, something like that. You know, with Murphy, I would say he ranked fourth because this, you know, these kind of metrics you're seeing now for him are kind of new. For him to hit 347 last year, you know, was a total outlier for him, I think. The 25 homers was kind of new. You know, the fans' projections are calling for him to hit 305 with 19 home runs, 80 RBIs. I think, you know, I talked to Murphy about this more than once. He became like a different hitter, like, you know, around playoff time because, you know, he made some tweaks to his swing with Kevin Long, like, you know, the second half of the 2015 season. But I don't know if we've seen enough of a track record of it where I can take him over a Cano or something like that. But, you know, here's a guy that I think, you know, can hit, you know, 300 with, say, 20 homers and give you good 80 RBIs and a good lineup.
All right, you're not taking him over Cano.
Yeah.
You're taking him over Dozier.
No, because Dozier, I can get 35 homers.
Are you taking him over VR?
No.
Are you taking him over Odor?
No.
Okay, there you go.
I'll take him over Gordon, though.
I'll ask Corey.
It's still a good pick.
I'll ask Corey and Tony the same question on the other side. We'll also continue this speed conversation. There's another poll question we want to get to. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning. This is the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.